This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, good Monday to you. Thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Tony D and Ron Culver. All right, here we go again. I'm sorry, but there's this trend going on, at least with the Celtics, where these games are just, you know, they're kind of close, and then there's this one quarter, whether it's Boston or their opponent, that just decides, yeah, we've had enough of this, let's move on, let's explode, and now let's be done. In game one, it was Boston. They did it in the fourth quarter, where they blew out Golden State. They were down by 12, they won by 12. And then last night, it was Golden State's turn in game two, as they outscored the Celtics 35-14 in the third quarter to pull away. That was a 19-point win by Golden State last night, and wasn't even that close. It was uncompetitive after that. And that's the trend we've got, at least, again, with the Celtics. At least with the Celtics, this is what's been going on. They did it all in that series against Miami, and now they're now so far in the first two games. We're going to get into this game last night and what went wrong for Boston, but more importantly, what went right for Golden State. Because, again, they had a two-point lead at halftime. It looked like we were getting a good back-and-forth game. A game that in the first half, I saw a lot of good things from Golden State, but I also saw a lot of good things from Boston that made me believe at halftime that Boston was going to squeak this one out. And I thought, man, Boston's going back to Massachusetts with a 2-0 lead in this series. I just feel like Boston is going to hang around just long enough. But that thought lasted 5 seconds as Golden State exploded in the third quarter and went on to just cruise to a victory. But now this series goes back to Boston for game three. And if you're accustomed to an NBA Finals, whether it's recent or whether it's distant memories, no matter when your era is, where home court mattered a lot, where home court was it was hard to steal a game on the road, then you're looking at the wrong team. Because Boston has lost critical games so far in this postseason at home. And they've gotten here to this point because they went on the road. They do not secure home court as well as teams in the past. So this series is going to get really interesting Wednesday night. We'll talk about game two, a 107-88 victory by Golden State to even this thing up at one. What went wrong for Boston? What went right for the Warriors? As we continue, it's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Good morning! Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. Golden State 107, Boston 88. We're tied up at one. Game got away from the Celtics in the third quarter. That's when Golden State outscored them 35-14. And again, as I said at the top of the hour, this is a trend. There's just that one moment. You can go to all these games, and there's just one moment when Boston plays a team, whether it's either them or their opponent, you can find this one moment where the game gets out of hand for one or the other. And then that's it. It's like it never goes back and forth all the way to the very, very end. Like even if you look at that game seven against the Miami Heat, Boston was up by 17 points at one point early. Miami got back into it. Then Boston went up by double digits. And then Miami late had a surge to make the game really close with Jimmy Butler's three coming up short, which would have given Miami the lead with 30 seconds remaining. But for the most part, all these games get away from one or the other team at some point in the second half. And it's by a huge margin. For Boston, it was the fourth quarter of game one. For the Golden State, it was the third quarter of game two. And this, for Boston, everything that worked for them in game one didn't work for them in game two. They didn't get the production that they had gotten in game one. Al Horford had a tremendous game in game one. He had 2 points. 2 points in game two. Marcus Smart, 2 points. That was it. And Jason Tatum, he was 3 of 17 in game one, but he led Boston in scoring at 28. So at least that did work for them. But Al Horford, Robert Williams, and Marcus Smart all had 2 points. That's three of your starters. That's three of your starters for the Celtics. And Golden State, Steph Curry, He had 5 3-pointers en route to 29 points. Klay Thompson couldn't hit anything at all. He was 4 of 19 from the floor for 11 points. It didn't matter because Jordan Poole was hitting everything from the outside, including a half-court shot at the end of the third quarter that had me screaming at the television. Because, first of all, he was knocking down everything, and then he just capped off the quarter with a half-court shot and just knocked it down. He didn't even heave it up. He shot it as if it was a jump shot.
Now, for a period there, it felt like he and Steph were going, you're going to hit it from here? I'll hit it from here.
Sure, why not? And Curry had a couple of way downtown threes. They were knocking down everything they saw in that third quarter.
See, I will say this. I know you brought up that it was just yet another blowout. But at least with the Warriors, they make it exciting.
They do make it exciting. You don't want to leave. Like, that was the weird thing watching this game as it was getting out of hand. I was like, I didn't want to leave. And listen, did I think that the Celtics were going to come back and no, because it was like a 25-point lead at one point early in the fourth quarter. And I'm like, they're not going to overcome a 25-point lead. Not now. Not the way Golden State kind of controlled that third. I was like, they're not going to overcome a 25-point lead. But I stuck with it because it was like the way Golden State plays is entertaining. They did a couple of things in this game, which I got to tell you. Golden State, Steph Curry had 29 points. It's not like he exploded for 50. But to have Klay Thompson just absolutely ineffective, 1 for 8 from the 3-point line, 4 of 19 from the floor, didn't matter. Didn't need him. Kevon Looney had 12 points. Andrew Wiggins had 11 points. Like I said, Jordan Poole had 17. That's all they needed. Golden State shot 45%. It's not like they shot 55, 56% from the floor. They knocked down 15 3-pointers. It's not like they knocked down 23, 25. It was a rather pedestrian night for Golden State. It didn't matter because nothing was working for Boston outside of Jason Tatum. The Celtics had 18 turnovers in this game that led to 33 Golden State points. Now, as I said at the top of the hour, now this series shifts to Boston. And last week we were talking to Brian Barrett about this, which is there were two games during the Eastern Conference playoffs for the Boston Celtics, where I thought they were done, and they were both games at home. They lost Game 5 to Milwaukee at home, needed Jason Tatum to pour it on in Game 6 to send it back to Boston for Game 7. But I thought Milwaukee up 3-2. And then they lost Game 6 at home to Miami when they should have buried the Heat and got them out of that playoffs as quickly as possible. And that sent everybody back on a plane to South Florida for Game 7. Now, what does that mean for Game 3? The idea that Boston is going home, favorable crowd, raucous arena. Karen Gagarian of the Boston Herald has put it best. You can't trust this. She was writing about it this morning. You can't trust that. In years past, you used to be able to trust that. That there was some sort of home cooking that would come for most teams in the postseason. Because, again, it's not just the home crowd and the energy that you get from it. Role players tend to do better at home than they do on the road. And yet you cannot trust this Boston team to win at home. They're actually really good on the road in this postseason. They won 3 road games in the Eastern Conference Finals. And they took Game 1 of this series when people thought Golden State would probably win Game 1. And if Boston were to get a game, it would probably be Game 2. But instead, Boston got the first game out of it. And as I said, at halftime, I thought they would win this game. It looked like things were working well for Golden State. But yet Boston was 2 points down at halftime. And I'm like, it's going to be just like the Celtics to not get any production from Marcus Smart, not get any production from Al Horford, but something else is going to happen, whether it's Pritchard, maybe he pours in double figures, maybe it's Robert Williams might start, who knows, right? Something is going to happen that's going to complement Jason Tatum, and they were going to be able to win. Nope, that was it. That was all she wrote. Golden State just cruises in the third. Boston struggles enough. Can't hit shots. Turn the ball over. That's all she wrote. Now we're tied up going into Wednesday's game three. I tell you, I am perplexed with these NBA playoffs because they're intriguing, but they're not entertaining other than watching one team blow out another team. If you're looking for real competitive series that's going down to the wire, that's giving you, you know, a back and forth affair, mano a mano, clash against clash, star against star, you find it. You could sift through the sand of these postseason games. You're just not going to find them. I mean, I would love one game to be Tatum and Curry going back and forth, knocking down shots against each other, and role players chipping in and guys just a game that just gets to the fourth quarter. We have no idea what's going on. It's 118 to 116, something along those lines. And actually, these two teams are probably too good defensively to get it up that high. But I just, right now, we're not getting that. Right now, we're not getting that. And in the, for the Celtics, not very often in the playoffs have they even been involved in games like that. Like I said, they've had that one game against Brooklyn. They won by a buzzer beater. Other than that, you know, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And I hope this gets a little bit more meaty. But you made a good point, and I think this is not lost on the rest of America who are casually watching this with no rooting interest, which is Golden State is a more entertaining team when they're blowing out an opponent than I think Boston is, or I think anybody else in the NBA is. They, especially when they do it at home. You know, we saw it all those years at Oracle in Oakland, and now we're seeing it at the Chase Center. They really thrive on energy from their home crowd. I get it. Home crowds do that to a lot of teams. But for the Warriors, and maybe it is because we've seen it so often. I mean, again, this is the sixth NBA Finals in 8 years. So we've really gotten a heavy, heavy diet of this, where they really take the energy of that crowd. And then they start burying you. I mean, it wasn't a shock that Jordan Poole knocked down a half-court shot just before the third quarter. As the ball was in the air, I thought it was going to go in. I assumed it was going to go in. There's just something about them. They feed off their crowd. They feed off the energy. And that's why it was so shocking in game one when Boston was able to take them out of the game in the fourth quarter. Because we don't see that very often at home with them. Especially when they go into the third quarter, coming out of the third quarter, I should say, with a double-digit lead. They are a team that will put their foot on the throttle, and then just when you think they're going to let off, they step on the gas, and now they've got it to the floor. And Boston was able to eliminate that aspect of their game in game one, but there was nothing in the tank for them in game two. There was just nothing in the second half. And Ime Udoka can go on that flight with two things in his head. He can say, well, I got a problem because the momentum is now shifting to a team that is really too dangerous. Even though we think we can match them player for player, they're too dangerous, and I've got to get momentum back and get it back quickly. If they win game three, we could be in real trouble in this series, because that's not a team that, you know, that when they're playing well, that we're going to just have an off night and still find a way to win. We got to be perfect. But I also earned the split of the series, which is all we really wanted. We can do the whole cliche of we want every game we play. But in reality, they know that if they got a split, they'd be in good shape. And they did. So it doesn't necessarily matter that game two was a 19-point blowout. What matters is, in the end, this is 1-1. It could be 19, it could be 29, it could be 9, it could be 2. It doesn't really matter. The end result is, get on that plane back to Boston for Wednesday's game three with the series tied at 1. And they got that the other night in game one, and now it is tied because Golden State was able to hold home court and get that victory that they needed. So Udoka can come away with two things here. And I guess the theory is still, in theory, the same for Steve Kerr. Right? Kerr getting on the plane to Boston can go, well, it's too bad that they got the split. I really needed to go up 2-0. I really would have liked to go up 2-0, but we have a split. I got to get one in Boston if I want home court back. But now I've got momentum. Golden State has blown off a number of bad games in the postseason knowing that they were the better team. I don't know if they're the better team in this series. I thought they were the better team against Memphis. I knew they were the better team against Dallas. But I don't know if they're the better team here. But I know they're more dangerous. I think they're way more dangerous than Boston because they can hit you in a number of different ways that Boston can't. Don't get me wrong. Boston definitely can hit you a number of ways. I think Golden State can do it more. That doesn't mean they'll win this series, though. And let's not forget one thing about Golden State. And I think this is overlooked. And it shouldn't be overlooked. Because as much fun as it is to watch them knock down the threes and the big deep shots. And again, Jordan Poole knocking one from half court and way downtown threes from Steph Curry. This is a very, 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 very good defensive basketball team. They're just not Boston good, and that overshines them. And that's why you can't really have a conversation, because Boston is the defensive team in the NBA. They are the best, and they are loud. But Golden State was very good defensively this year. They're just not Boston good. And I think by the 18 turnovers, and then the fact that their offense kicked in and turned it into 33 points, is really a mark on how good defensively they are. And the fact that they could take Al Horford and Marcus Smart to combine 2 for 10 to take them out of their game. Again, Jason Tatum had 28. He needed 38. He needed 48 last night because he wasn't getting much help from anybody else. All right. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. We'll be discussing more on the NBA. We've got a busy weekend in sports. We got Rafael Nadal winning the French Open. We got another golfer heading towards the Saudi Arabian-backed LIV Golf League, but I don't know if that many people care about this one. We'll have all that for you coming up as Wake Up Call continues.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Good Monday to you. We'll get more back to the NBA Finals Game 2 last night in San Francisco. The LIV Golf Tour in Saudi Arabia, in London, I should say, this week, Saudi Arabian back tour, has now got Kevin Na on board. I know, for a lot of you, who's Kevin Na? I get it. Don't get me wrong. But Kevin Na did something rather interesting, and I only bring it up for this reason. So when Dustin Johnson decided to go on with this, I think the Dustin Johnson camp is trying to basically play chicken with the PGA Tour, right? You're really not going to suspend me. You're really not going to keep me out of tour events. I eventually am going to be able to do both. I think they're playing a little chicken with the PGA Tour. Kevin Na resigned from the PGA Tour. He retired from the PGA Tour. He said, that's it. I've played on this tour for a number of years. I've made my money. I've won a couple. I'm done. I'm retired. And he wants to play on the LIV Tour because he claims there's freedom because he gets to play when he wants, where he wants. But in reality, we know why he did it. It's because of the money. Money's too good. Just say it. It's fine. We all get it. You don't have to give us some higher than, holier than thou feeling of, feeling like you're an independent contractor and you want the freedom to play. Okay. But in reality, it's because there's a six-figure guarantee even if you finish last at this event. Whereas on the PGA Tour, you miss the cut, you don't get a nickel. But I think he did something rather interesting that it may have a number of veterans reconsidering their position on the PGA Tour. And here's why. The PGA Tour has a wonderful pension plan. Players pay a little into it. The tour pays a little into it. And a certain number of years of service, you get a pretty hefty pension plan. They protect you in retirement. And by the way, in a sport where retirement doesn't come until like your late 50s, you can play on the Champions Tour. You can play in your 60s if you want. But it's not like the NBA pension plan or the NFL pension plan or, and, you know, Major League Baseball where, you know, 30-something, 40 is probably the max you're getting out of it. Rare exception for players playing beyond that. But for the most part, late 30s, early 40s, you're done, and then you get on the retirement plan. PGA Tour, you can do the retirement plan all the way through forever. But Kevin Na retired. He didn't quit. He retired. That way, he still gets his pension money. He can now have that pension kick in for him. He doesn't lose that. He filed the right paperwork. He didn't quit to go there. He retired to go there. They sound like the same thing, but it isn't. So imagine if you are a 35-year-old tour veteran grinding it out week in and week out. All right? Sometimes you make a cut. Sometimes you don't make it. You make a cut. You've made some money. You've not made some money. You've had really good years. You've had some bad years. Maybe you've won two or three tournaments in your entire career. You've never played on the Ryder Cup. You've never played on the President's Cup. You've never even contended for a major, although you've probably played in a couple. Right? Think about that guy. He's out there every day hitting 1,000 golf balls, pitching, chipping, seeing a mental coach, seeing a swing coach. He's got 10 people on his payroll that he's paying. He's out there trying to earn a living. He goes to the memorial. He misses the cut. He doesn't make any money. He goes to the next tour stop. He makes the cut. Maybe he makes 50 grand. Maybe he makes 100 grand. Maybe he makes 1.2 million. But he doesn't really know. He's on that cusp of, I'm good enough to be on the tour, but I'm not good enough to be a superstar on the tour. And every week is a grind, and I'm trying to make a decent living out of this, but I got a lot of people depending on me, et cetera, et cetera. But he's put in his time. Right? That's the key. He's put in his time. He's just got enough. Tell me the LIV Tour isn't absolutely attractive. They pay every single player. There is a $160,000 guarantee for every single player at the minimum. It's a minimum. You show up to London to play in this thing, six figures automatically in your account. Probably more because you won't finish last. Although somebody's got to finish last. But even if you do, six figures guaranteed. No cuts. Everything is paid for. And Greg Norman is rolling out the red carpet. These are luxury experiences. Five-star hotels, five-star food and catering for you, your caddy, and your family. They're paying for the travel accommodations. The tour, you have to pay your own way, and your caddy has to pay his own way. That's a deal, by the way, of being a caddy. Some guys are lucky enough to be with guys that may have their own jet or whatnot and travel with them, but for the most part, middle-of-the-road golfers, the caddy pays his own expenses to get to the job. So they're paying for the caddy. They're paying for the player to travel, five-star luxury experience to play on this. And again, guaranteed money. It's not Dustin Johnson. I'm not talking about Dustin Johnson guaranteed money. I'm not talking about superstar guaranteed money. The guys that they're really going to dish out the money for. I'm talking about showing up and playing and knowing that there is a paycheck at the end of this no matter what. Think about the middle-of-the-road golfer. Again, the PGA Tour is a nice life. Don't get me wrong. It's not working in the coal mines or having or a tough job out there. You know, it's not one of those type of jobs that's hard on the body. It's, you know, those guys who do that really well. It's really hard living. PGA Tour, not trying to equate it, but thinking about the guys that are out there grinding week in and week out. The LIV Tour is extremely attractive. And for Kevin Na, he doesn't care what the issues are. He just knows that his direction is, I can do this, stay middle level. Again, how many of you have even heard of Kevin Na? Right? Not very many. He's not a superstar. But he could be the more important name. Because, it's Dustin Johnson is a superstar. But Dustin Johnson isn't going to bring Rory McIlroy into this thing. He's not going to bring Justin Thomas. Kevin Na could bring in a good group of middle golfers. The guys that aren't the Scottie Schefflers yet. The guys that were a couple of years in, started to get really good. Those are the guys at a certain point in their career could shift over and become good golfers there. Great golfers there. Who knows? But that was the other big news over the weekend. Tony D, Ron Culver, it's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue this Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. So you know what my wife and I did over the weekend? We had an empty house, just her and I. My daughter was off to camp.
Is it safe for work?
Yes. Okay. We watched the original Top Gun.
There you go.
Because we were going to go see Top Gun Maverick at some point. And I said to her, I said, you know, I hate to admit this, but I saw Top Gun in the 80s and I never watched it again. I never saw it again.
Really?
I said, yeah, I never saw it again. It's really not on. It's not on TV. I never see it on TV. So it's not like I would have rented it. You know what I mean? I'm not a guy that I don't rent Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Like when I go to the video store, I've seen it. Like when I go to the video store, I rent movies either I love or I want to see. So Top Gun was not a movie I would have just said, I'm 30 and I want to relive my youth. No, I would be looking at the new movies, and it's never on television. I may have seen it on once or twice, but I never see it consistently like I do like some other classic movies of that generation. So I said to her, I haven't seen it in a long, long, long time. I said, let's rewatch it. And she goes, I saw it. I go, I know. I said, but let's watch it. If we're going to go see Maverick, let's rewatch it. So we rewatched it. And it was, you know, it was a fun 1980s 80s movie. But you know what I noticed? I know this is probably obvious to people, but it sort of hit me, is like Tom Cruise made a series of movies in the 1980s where no matter what it was, he was the best at it. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So whether it was Pool Player, Cocktail Bartender, NASCAR Driver, Fighter Pilot, I'm trying to think of another one, Lawyer. He was the best. And there was always a line in the movie where they told him that. Where they said, you are the best.
What about Swindler? I'm trying to think what he was in Risky Business.
Maybe that was another one, right?
Con Artist in Risky
Con
Business?
Artist?
I don't know.
Maybe that, yeah. But like, you know, Paul Newman in Color of Money. He was the best. Bartender, he was the best. NASCAR, he was the best. Days of Thunder, he was like a cocky California guy going to driving. Now he was an open wheel driver, gonna learn to drive stock cars, but he could drive the wheels off that like nobody else. Same thing with Top Gun. He was the best. Kelly McGillis, she couldn't help herself.
She never gets involved with pilots.
She never gets involved with pilots. She sees a million of them all the time. It's her job. They come and go. Her whole life, her whole career, I should say, they come and go to this Top Gun school. And she couldn't help herself. She fell in love with him immediately and was risking her job because she loved him so much because he was the best. That's Tom Cruise. And we were sitting there, my wife and I were sitting there watching this movie, and we were like, this guy, he's been famous forever. He has been famous for an eternity. He's got the hottest movie in the theaters in 2022.
Yes.
This might be the highest grossing movie of 2022. It's when it's all said and done, when the whole year is over, he might have the number one movie of the year. And Top Gun came out when? 86? When Reagan was president? You got to be out of your mind. That guy, forever. Everything he does.
Everything he touches. Was he the best football player?
In All the Right Moves?
In All the Right Moves.
I don't remember that movie. I know Leah Thompson was in it, I think.
How about this? Was he the best brother? In Rain Man,
yeah, that's a good one. No, but he was highly successful.
He was
at a young age. Did he sell cars or something like in that movie?
I think so.
Whatever it was, he was highly successful, and that's how he changed.
He was the best vampire.
Yeah, He was, yeah, he was the better vampire.
I'm sorry, I'm just going over a list of his
movies.
I forgot that he had done.
By the way, interview with the vampire, that movie, I always loved the ending of that movie. Every time it's on, I wait till the ending when Christian Slater's driving in the car and Tom Cruise grabs him from behind and takes over driving the car. And he goes, and he's listening to the tape, and he goes, Louie, always whining. Such a good line. But yeah, you're right. He's been great. Like, he's the best thing that's out there.
Now, I'm not going to, this isn't a spoiler for Top Gun Maverick,
mm-hmm.
but you do get the obligatory running scene.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's cool.
Because I don't know why that is a thing with him, but in every single movie he's ever done, there is a running scene.
Right. That's true.
I don't know if it's written in the contract. Like when he performs, he's like, hey, and then we're going to have like a minute montage of you just running.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
So my wife and I are going to go see that. And we'll probably try to go to the theater one night this week, go to the movie theaters one night this week to catch it before our vacation. So, I don't know. It was kind of fun. It's kind of fun to go down the 1980s memory lane. You know, because you have to kind of get a couple of decades away from the 80s movies to sort of see the formula. They all have the music. They all have the montage a bit. They all have like a little, there's just the style of a 1980s movie.
True.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you've never heard of Top Gun, but you grew up in the 80s, but barely remember, you could put it in and you know it's an 80s movie. Like, there's just the way it was and the way it sounds that you go, ah, it's probably a mid-80s movie. You're like, yeah, you're right. Exactly. The way it is. So, yeah.
And you don't have to go vibrant colors.
No, not
you know,
really.
Because a lot of movies tend to do that, especially now. If they were to do a like nostalgic feel of the 80s, they got to go, oh, we got to go bright colors. Because everyone was wearing like neon colors everywhere.
By the way, going back to Rain Man, I always agreed with Roger Ebert. Roger Ebert made a really strong case that Tom Cruise deserved Best Actor for that movie rather than Dustin Hoffman. Because Dustin Hoffman played an autistic character, but he never changed. He stayed on that same level. And Tom Cruise's character really changed.
He evolved.
He really evolved. You saw the ups and downs, the emotion, ups and downs, dealing with Raymond and how he grew to love Raymond and how he had to, you know, he fought for Raymond when he didn't want Raymond and then he did. And you really saw this sort of up and down of emotions that he went through. And Roger Ebert always said that's more challenging than what Dustin Hoffman did. Dustin Hoffman had to learn one particular way to act that character and then he stayed with it the whole movie. He never altered that. He stayed with that the whole movie, whereas Tom Cruise had to be arrogant and obnoxious to a loving, caring brother all in the process. He was using Raymond for his own personal gain, and then he grew to love him and care for him and didn't want to lose him. It was kind of a good evolve. But anyway, it was a fun weekend to watch this fun Top Gun movie because now I'm going to go see it in the theaters. So I was really, really excited. I said, what's next for us? What another 80s movie should we watch? Raiders of the Lost Ark? I'm trying to figure out what other movies I could watch. I was trying to think of another one that we both were talking about over the week. I can't quite remember it. We were talking. Oh my God, my memory's going blank. We actually were talking about what other 80s movies could we watch? Like, you know, like we both have different styles of movies that we like. And so we don't really watch a lot of movies together anymore. She likes certain movies. I like certain movies. But every now and then we'll come together on one. Like, she loves disaster movies, so any disaster movie we'll watch. We both like the Jurassic Park movies and whatnot. But can't quite think of what other movie we were talking about in the 1980s that we were going to try to find again and watch. But you know,
teen movie or maybe a rom-com?
Maybe, I don't know. I can't quite remember.
I'm trying to think.
Wasn't Wall Street or anything like that.
Pretty Woman.
Pretty Woman might have been it, but that... Yeah. Was that early 90s, though, Pretty Woman?
I don't remember.
I think it was.
Maybe it was early 90s.
I think it was early 90s. I think all the Julia Robert most of the Julia Robert hit movies were in the 90s. But anyway, I know you saw Maverick, Top Gun Maverick. So,
And I enjoyed it. I mean, this, you know, and I'm not wanting to give anything away, but I mean, the effects are so much better. It is,
I heard, yeah.
It is insane. You know, when I, because I rewatched Top Gun, and just even the opening scene, there was just like this orange hue.
Yeah.
To it that you don't have in this one. And,
and also,
that was one of the things I was really excited about. I was like, I'm glad they just went natural color.
And I don't know how Top Gun was made in 86, but it looked to me, and this is just speculation on my part, that there was just a lot of stock footage, like of missiles being fired and things like they just took like stock footage. It looked like the same kind of shot whenever they launched a missile. It was like,
well, they're actually, I mean, literally when they're in the dogfight at the end in the original Top Gun,
yeah,
there is a, they showed one of the scenes twice.
Yeah, 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 right, right.
And it's when the planes are all flying, flipping over each other and stuff like that. It's like, it's a mirror. They didn't even decide to reverse the film. They just said, you know, we're just going to keep it the same.
Yeah,
it looked
exactly
good.
So,
it's like, they got the perfect shot. It's like, how many times can we use this?
I saw somebody got into a World War II plane with Tom Cruise, because Cruise has his pilot's license.
Well, that's his plane, too.
Would you get into that plane with Tom Cruise?
Are you talking about James Corden?
Was that James Corden? I just saw somebody. I didn't know who it was.
James Corden.
Would you get in a plane with Tom, an old plane like that with Tom Cruise?
Yes, I would.
You would?
I would.
Is he that good of a pilot?
He is. He has logged many, many, many hours.
But he's not.
See, you need to watch the movie.
I hate
for
to
me
say
to
this.
Say,
no, don't get me wrong. I hate to say this, but he's. Yes, I agree that he is, but he's also logged many, 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 many miles doing something other than flying.
True.
Does that make sense?
Very true.
Like, if I was in the passenger seat of a race car driver, and the guy behind the wheel of the car was like, well, I'm technically a race car driver, but I'm an actor.
I mean, it was like Will Ferrell?
Yeah, like if Will Ferrell's like, I've gotten a lot of mileage. I've driven this many, many hours on this racetrack, but I'm not a professional race car driver. But I've done this a lot. I'd still be like, I don't know.
You may not do it with Will Ferrell, but you would jump in a race car with John C. Reilly, wouldn't you?
Maybe John C. Reilly, right? Like, I would be like, yeah, I get it. You're a pilot, and I get you know what you're doing, but you're not a professional pilot. Like, you're not a I do this for a living pilot. And if we're going to get in this thing, I kind of want a guy that like whose his whole life is flying planes, if that makes any sense. Not like a very detailed and obsessive hobby, if that makes any sense. But anyway, good. It was good. I can't wait to go see this. Also, the Jurassic Park movie. I gotta go see that too. Although that series is wearing on me a bit.
Well, like, you can do that after vacation.
What world are we going to live in with the Jurassic Park movies where the dinosaurs? Its appeal, its advertising is dinosaurs are just roaming free around the world. Like, what world do we want to live in with dinosaurs roaming? Like, if you were like, I think I'll go out for a jog on this beautiful summer day, and a raptor just decides it's feeding time. And he just jumps out of the woods and bye. That's it. Is that what this movie's basically implying now? Man, it was so better. Like, when Michael Crichton wrote the book, it was just, leave it at that. Now we got Tyrannosaurus Rex is just walking in downtown Midtown Manhattan on a summer day. No, I don't know how do you resolve that? So I don't know if I want to, I don't necessarily know if I want to see that one. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. Coming up, the Angels going to win a game, because my God, they are losing, and they are losing fast. And everything we were hoping for is going out the window. That's next on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I remember the movie in the 80s that we were going to try to visit, Summer School with Mark Harmon. I don't know why I missed that one. That's actually a pretty good movie.
That's a good movie.
That's a good movie. Courtney Thorne Smith is in it.
Hot.
Christy Alley is in it.
Decent.
I'm trying to remember. Anybody else? Any other star that was in it?
Quarterback star of UCLA.
Mark Harmon. Yeah, Mark Harmon, of course, was the teacher.
Was he a quarterback or defensive back?
No, I think he was a defensive player, yeah.
Maybe he was a defensive player.
But I'm not 100% sure on that. Michael on Twitter, how about bringing back Breakfast Club? Oh, that's a good one. Judd Nelson is getting out of prison.
Molly Ringwald is married to a high school tech high-tech billionaire. Emilio Estevez is a failed athlete and still trying to find himself. And Ali Sheedy is in a mental institution.
We already saw that movie with Emilio Estevez.
That's right. Yeah. Mighty Ducks. It's amazing. That group made Breakfast Club and then St. Elmo's Fire. That group of actors. Breakfast Club was a good movie. But you know what has been pointed out many times is that the principal got a bad rap, but the principal was right in that movie. Just wanted a little order. But did you ever have a Saturday detention when you were in school?
Never.
Did you guys have those? I never had one. We never had one. The idea of any of my teachers coming in on a Saturday was insane. They weren't going to spend their entire Saturday in a detention. No chance. And our principal absolutely wasn't going to
that. I'll be honest with you. I mean, I remember having a Saturday soccer game and skeleton crew at best. I mean, they barely were able to open up the locker room to let us
exactly.
in.
Exactly. Watching that movie, I'm like, oh my God, what a hard high school that was. They made them come in on Saturdays all day, sit there and do nothing in the library. Yikes. But yeah, that was, what was that? The Brat Pack? Is that what they called them? Well, they didn't call themselves that. I think Hollywood called them that, right?
Yeah.
St. Elmo's Fire is a pretty good movie. I think I like Breakfast Club better. But St. Elmo's Fire was a good movie. All right, that's a little 80s movies recap. All right, coming up next, we've got the good, the bad, and the dumb. And then we'll get to this Angels losing skid because, man, this is really bothering me. I'm actually personally offended by the Angels' way of playing baseball. I was really hoping they would make the playoffs. It doesn't look like they're going to win another game. That's all coming up in hour number two. And we'll get back to game two of the NBA Finals.